Music and Booze with Mo is co-produced and distributed by Nitty Grits, the media division of the National Food and Beverage Foundation, changing the world one taste at a time. Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there is a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by The Mermaid, a cozy neighborhood bar with an aquatic flair in the Little Tokyo area of downtown LA. Open 7 days a week, featuring tropical cocktails and snacks, The Mermaid also has a daily happy hour from 5 to 8 p.m. Follow The Mermaid on Instagram at TheMermaidLA to hear about upcoming events and check them out at TheMermaidLA.com. Head to 428 East 2nd Street, Los Angeles, for a drink. A few months back, I was hanging out at a bar in Brooklyn, and I was lucky enough to meet Alistair Burgess, aka Ali, who we're going to sit down and chat with now. He owns Happiness Forgets in London, which is one of the world's best bars, has been so named for the last, 7 years or so? And I think they've not even been open for 10. So that's a bit of an accomplishment. Anyhow, Ali's going to tell us how he got there, what comes when he's finished with all of that, and in between, house music, soulful house music, maybe a dabble of the Black Keys and some other stuff as well, and Happiness Forgets is named after a song. We might get to hear a little bit of it.
I used to dabble in DJing a little bit.
That counts. But, well, anything counts, really. But
I really mean, especially kind of having the bars, ever since, like, when I first kind of moved to London, I probably said, like, my early 20s, I kind of, I used to go to nightclubs and field parties and raves a lot as a kid. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, illegal warehouse parties, like, in the, like, the mid to late
90s. I used to DJ those in San Francisco in the early 90s.
My older brother is 45, 46.
So he was the good influence on you?
He was the bad influence. So, like, my parents used to, like, go away and leave me in his charge. And I was, like, 13, 14. And he was off his mate's house, backed out in this massive open field. And they used to run God knows how many extension cables to power lights.
And they did it at your house?
No, not my house, my friend's house.
Friend's house.
Because, I mean, literally, because I come from, like, the countryside of England, about 40 miles south of London. And they used to run probably, like, 10, 15 extension leads to power sound systems, lights, and the decks and all sorts. And they used to kind of play records from, like, 8, 9, 10 at night until, like, 5, 6, 7 in the morning.
I was going to say, it has to be when the sun comes up. It's not a proper rave unless the sun is coming up.
And there would just be, like, it would just be a massive, massive field, huge field, probably, like, 5, 6, 7, 800 odd people.
And but no there would police be like, ever came?
It's in you the were middle just of the fucking countryside. There's nothing.
There was nothing out there.
It's like the closest house was, like, a mile down the road.
That's awesome.
It was ridiculous.
I think it's awesome. So,
and there would just be, like, 8 or 9 different, like, bonfires that would just be burning all night. People just pissed and taking drugs and dancing around. And because I was in my older brother's show, I was like, I'm not staying home on a Friday night. We're going to my mate's fucking real party. and this would be, like, every, like, whatever. So from, like, 13, 14 years old, I was, like, totally up and in, like, the dance music scene that was kind of kicking off in, like, the mid-90s. So I was born in 78, so by, like, 93, 94, 95, I'm like, 13, 14, 15 years old.
So you were at the height of it at that time. Yeah. I remember in San Francisco in the early 90s, I was into that and also DJing that. I listened to all kinds of music, but San Francisco had a really thriving underground club scene.
Yeah.
Always did. And when and since it also has a huge gay scene, all that music that was coming from Detroit and from England was just... Oh, we just found the place. I remember doing one of those... go to this parking lot, get the map, get in the back of this moving truck, and we will drag you to this airplane hangar. But we never knew where we were going.
Well, for us, it used to be old farmhouses and barns and warehouses and stuff that would be out in the countryside or whatever.
See, you were in the country. We were in the middle of the city, so we got what we could get. And I remember a friend of mine saying, how did you know you weren't just going to be taken to a mass grave? And I'm like, that just wasn't what was done.
Yeah, no,
not
it wasn't.
At that time.
And then I was heartbroken. I kind of got to the age of like 16, 17, mm-hmm. and it got to the point where police were raiding all the parties, whatever. And it's like they all got shut down, and then everything moved. All those DJs that used to play all those field parties and stuff then moved into nightclubs. And I was like, I can't go anymore. This is shit. So I had to wait till I was 18 to be able to go back to get
nightclubs. And then it was like dying.
I had a complete baby face, and I was never getting into a pub or a nightclub when I was 17. Just not happening.
Well, I always try to start these things by having people introduce themselves. So you tell someone who you are and where you work or what are your businesses and all of that. Then we'll tie it back into raves, huh?
Sure.
So, introduce yourself.
So, my name's Alistair Burgess. Mm-hmm. I think everyone pretty much calls me Ali. Because it's easy.
Yeah. My full name is not Mo. So I get you on that.
I'm officially not young anymore, and I can't get away with what I used to do. I've been working in hospitalities and bars for 22 years. And I currently own... 3 venues in East London, mm-hmm. 2 bars and a restaurant. One of the bars is pretty world renowned and it's been on the 50 best bars list for 7
That's
years
right.
in a row.
7 years in a row?
7 years in the truck.
How long
we've
has
been
it
in
been
50
open?
Years. 9.
And this bar would be?
This bar is Happiness Forgets. Mm-hmm. And it's also won best, Tells the Cocktail Best International Cocktail Bar twice.
Are you allowed to win twice?
Well, you're not allowed to win 2
categories.
Years in a row. No, same category. So we've won the same category twice.
Congratulations,
so the year,
look at
I know,
you.
And there aren't many bars that have done that.
I would think it would be you and possibly Dead Rabbit or something.
No, they haven't won the same award twice.
So you just wink at them from
I think the only bar that may have won Best Hotel Bar twice is maybe
like
the Artesian. Or maybe the Connaught.
Nice. And so what are your other places? Because I'm sure they aren't
so the other one
either.
We have is called, well, the bar is called Original Sin. Mm-hmm. It is kind of like a cocktail dive bar, kind of massively taking like a cue from like American saloons.
That
like
actually,
the long, long bar, lots
of wood,
whatever.
That was our
goal too,
cocktail dive.
free to play pool table. We have live music and stuff in there. Oh, super nice. Cool. And then for my pain, for my sins, I opened up a small French bistro. Because I love the way French treat their eating and drinking culture just all day, every day.
I was going to say, does that mean that you can come in and just get some really rich, creamy soup and sit there for 4 hours?
Literally,
while
yes. That's literally it.
Then I like that place an awful lot. That is one of my favorite things about being there is that culture of just sitting at a table. Again, I'm a big fan of the extra creamy soup that the French do oh so well. But just sitting there and just watching people walk by.
Yeah,
you know,
everything has, lashes and lashes of cream and butter. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you. It's, we all know it doesn't
and
really count unless there's a lot of butter in it,
no.
right?
Well, it doesn't taste good. Just put more butter and more salt in it. It'll be fine.
Well, let's go back to drinks then because I'm thinking of duck fat. Do you do any of that fancy fat washing and such? Have you dabbled in that?
We used to peanut butter fat wash or fat wash with peanut butter whiskey for a few drinks we've kind of done kind of across the days, but we're not that kind of silly, crazy science, molecular, for want of a better word, style bar. We take fresh ingredients and we use them with delicious spirits and we make tasty drinks.
Well, I was speaking with you briefly last night about Happiness Forgets and you had said, I just wanted to open a bar where I could drink.
Yeah.
So, and I completely relate to that. So, what got you to that point, to opening up that bar?
I started in a bar. Because, no, literally, almost literally, but now officially, like over half my life, I've wanted to have my own bar. I got into bars because quite simply, I failed school. I was just a lazy shit. I didn't fail because I'm not smart. I just didn't go to school.
It just wasn't your thing.
Yeah, like because in the UK, you finish school when you're 16. Mm-hmm. And then you could either go and do further education or you go to work. Mm-hmm. I went and did further education, but because it's not compulsory, and if you don't turn up, They don't go phoning your parents. So all of a sudden...
So guess what I can do now?
There was no motivation for me to whatever. So it's like, I could go out and go to field parties and raves on like a school night because...
But as we already discussed, you were 16 and now those things were all going into proper clubs. Yeah. So
I then used
to spend...
You had
to go work in those clubs.
I then spent my time like skiving off of college and just going into arcades and playing video games. And maybe go to college to like submit my assignment, which I got really a grade on because I did it the night before and I was supposed to spend 3 months researching this shit. And I didn't, and I winged it. So I failed college and I got a job in a bar. I just got really lucky that I actually happened to fall in love with doing what I was doing. I love interacting with people and socializing and talking to people and meeting new people. But also as an 18-year-old, you're like, holy shit, I'm in an environment where I get to drink after work, I get to meet lots of girls, and I can also get into nightclubs that I love and listen to music for free because in around the area, I worked in a cool bar and everybody wanted to know what to get free drinks for me. So
I got in the music industry for similar reasons. So.
The benefits of being an 18-year-old working in a bar were exponentially greater than having a bloody office job or working in a bank. So... No, now I'm too fucking old. I 2 o'clock last night or 1:30 when we were done, I was really flagging. I was like,
you're tired.
I want to go to bed and I want to make sure I get up and go and have a good breakfast.
So then what is it that inspires you these days since the motivations have changed?
Me? So when I was 20, I decided I wanted a bar. Mm-hmm. And over the years, that bar that I wanted to open very, very much changed.
Yeah.
I lived and worked in New York for 2 years, 2006, 2007. Mm-hmm. And then that really kind of really was like the major inspiration. That was like the real turning point. Because prior to that, I just pretty much worked in what I call like high street bars, high volume. Mm-hmm. It was like pints of beer, bottled beer,
the pub
RTDs,
bars.
Whatever. Yeah, it was just like...
What brought you here?
A girl.
I
met a girl in London and she was American. Her visa was up. And I was like, well, if you're going to go to New York, if you're going to go back to America... We have to go to New York because I'm not going to get an illegal job working in Boston, which is where she's from. So I managed to buy a green card and a social security number off a Mexican in Queens for $200.
As you do.
Yeah.
I'm from San Diego. I know how this goes.
Yeah. So I did that and then I managed to get a job at what is like one of the most renowned cocktail bars in the city at the time and quite a historic venue for the city and in the global cocktail scene. That was the Pegu Club.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just remember Audrey Saunders looking at my green card and social and then flipped it over, and then looked at me, looked back at it, and then looked at me. At this point, I'd been working there for 6 weeks, and she just looked at me and she went, as long as it works, I don't care.
She was really one of those talent spotters, wasn't she?
And I was very sheepish and kind of dropped my head and went, okay, cool, I'll go back to work then. And then a year and a half later, I worked for her, and it was amazing. And like, it really kind of put me on the map and taught me everything I knew, kind of really at that point, kind of about drinks. And I left New York in 2007. My 30th birthday was coming up. I'd broken up with a girl, and I was like, I can't be a 30-year-old illegal bartender in New York. I need to get on with my life. It's like, I want my own bar, and I'm not going to do it being here. Mm-hmm. So I went back to London. And I didn't quite have it by the time I was 30, but I managed to open up a bar by the time I was 31, maybe 31.
You opened a bar by then?
Yeah. So it took me like a year and a
That's
half,
a
just over a year and a half of being back in London. And I opened a bar, my first bar in London when I was 31.
Wow. That's huge.
And then the goal was like, yeah, cool. Open up a few more, make enough money, and then kind of, you know, open up a few, then sell them all off to a big company for millions and millions and millions, and then... just buy my own little small one and just be happy in retirement.
And that's,
that goal's now slightly shifted. So now you ask me what my motivations are now.
I was going to say, wait, where are the millions and millions and millions?
Not coming as quickly as I would have liked.
But still on course for that.
Well, sure. Yeah, I have fingers crossed. But like the goal in life now is, I'm now 41, so it's 10 years later after I opened up my first bar nearly. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I now want to be retired. My goal is that I want to retire by the time I'm 50, give or take a few. Mm-hmm. And I want to move to the Mediterranean, have myself a 35 whatever foot yacht. And I'm an avid scuba diver now. Well, not now, but I've been scuba diving for a long time. Uh-huh. And I just want to be somewhere where it's warm every day. I want to be beside the sea. I'd like to have my own dive center where I teach people to scuba dive, that also has a coffee shop, cafe, like selling sandwiches and like simple food, and a cocktail bar on the side. Yeah. And in the harbor's my yacht. And if
Which
I don't want to...
small one.
Yeah. And if I don't have to do any work, if I don't want to do any work, I don't have to go and do any work.
Because there's someone else. You just drop in.
That's literally it. So that is now my motivation.
I think that's a pretty excellent goal to have. And so, your current, with the bars that you have currently, we talked about community and the importance of community. So let's say on that yacht, I guess that's a different kind of neighborhood vibe, isn't it?
But the thing is, it's all about... teaching. Yeah, absolutely, right? And it's very much about being part of the community in the area you're in. Uh-huh. So, I mean, you service the community in the neighborhood by having a business that brings people to it, that then services the other bars and restaurant stuff that's going on. A small little cafe and bar because I love fucking food and drink. And my boat because I just love being on the water.
I grew up by the beach in San Diego. I grew up in a surf culture.
Yeah.
My high school had a surf PE class. We had a surf team. So everything you're saying resonates with me, except for the yacht part, which I never had that. And we couldn't really scuba, we surfed instead.
Yeah.
But it's very similar because in that community, small businesses, everyone knows each other. You walk in barefoot,
you thrive off it.
Grab the coffee, do all of this. I think that you can do that. I have a feeling that you'll be able to.
The really funny thing is actually, to achieve that, I don't need to make the millions and millions and millions to be able to do it.
No.
Because if I've got a business that's kind of like a small business,
that's
continue bringing me income, do you know what? I'll be really happy without the hustle bustle of like, the one thing that the hospitality industry has now is this, it has this need and want for everybody to prove themselves. Mm.
Do you think that's true internationally? Because I live in the United States where everyone works very hard.
100%. Everyone is trying to prove themselves, to prove that they're bigger and better than the next person. And then everyone's all of a sudden getting jealous of the guy who's maybe now getting more attention than they were, whatever. Don't get me wrong, I fall into that trap. I find that trap being like, why someone talk about them? I mean, you know, I've done this, whatever. And it's like, I'm now at the point where I'm like, you go and have it. I'm really happy just kicking on with what I'm doing. And
do you think that that's part of the success of your bars? I mean, Happiness Forgets is a lovely, simple place.
Yeah.
The drinks are good. I mean, it's clean. People are friendly. The drinks are good. It's welcoming. It's very simple compared to what a lot of people are trying to do. We talk about the idea of concept bars, and people get this big idea in their heads, and that's wonderful. If this is what you want, go for it.
I mean,
but there's something to be said also for the simple neighborhood bar.
Success is a double-edged sword, and I actually think success is what, and if you can't notice it and identify it, success is actually
a hindrance.
Potentially, no, inherently evil. Evil is a strong word. But the reason being is, right, so we've been on the 50 best bars list for 7 years on a trot. And because of that, you know, we've won whatever tails. And I never set out to win or achieve any of these goals. I just wanted to open a bar I want to drink in. Mm-hmm. I just like making good drinks, and I like shit to be good, and I want service to be good. And then that resonates with people. Mm-hmm. But when you start winning these awards, success comes with many things. One, because you've won an award, everyone thinks, oh my God, this place is the 12th, 10th, whatever best bar in the world. It's won this award. It must be amazing. So everyone comes in, they walk
and
in with ridiculously
high
expectations.
Yes.
And so, I mean, our highest ranking has been 6th place in the 50 best. And 6th, that's ridiculous. We opened the bar for $25,000. And yet, a bar
that's insane.
That was like below us, for example, is something like when they first entered the list, and for the first 2 years they're on the list, they were lower than this. And that was Dandelion. Mm-hmm. And this is a multi-million pound bar. Mm-hmm. And then people walk into it like, so I was in Dandelion. How is this higher than Dandelion? That place looks amazing. It's like, because it's different horse for courses. So the expectation level is really bad. Mm-hmm. But then another side where it's really good is that everyone asks me what I think is really, really good. So like, I then fall into a trap of them becoming really, really critical of everything and other bars. And that's a really horrible place to be, because people want to know your opinion. Mm-hmm. You then start giving your opinion. They'll be like, yeah, but then that's bitchy. I'm like, well, I don't think this is very good because of this, that, the other. And all of a sudden, you start judging everything way too much. And I now take a real conscious effort just to be like, do you know what? I'm only going to go to places I like and talk about the real positive things of yes. places and venues that I really like.
Yes.
And really have to get out of that game of comparing stuff because everything's really freaking different.
Your qualifier is my favorite versus the best.
And I also hate that saying is that saying my favorite is also, I think, inherently a bad word because yeah. someone's favorite thing changes yeah. so many times.
I've worked in the music industry for
it's now like, I now talk about like, do you know what bars I really like? I really like this bar. I really like this bar mm-hmm. and I really like hang out here and I really like hang out here. And I really stay away from using that word favorite
as well.
I really kind of stay away from that of like bashing bars. And if I don't like a bar, you'll know I don't like a bar because I won't talk about it.
Uh-huh.
And that's really, really.
I only relate that in that since I've worked in music for such a long time, yeah. I worked in radio for 10 years, I worked in music publishing, I was a music writer, all of this, people always say, oh, what were the best albums this year? And I always have to start by saying, well, I can't tell you what the best is for you, but I can tell you what I enjoyed yeah. about this year. I can tell you what my favorites were, but it might have nothing to do with anything you like at all.
Yeah. No, it's completely true.
You know?
And the thing is, it's very subjective. The thing, again, especially learning that in the food and drink world, is you can't tell people what they like.
No.
Which is really crazy. And people ask you, like, oh, what's your favorite drink on the menu? And I quite it's always a girl. And I answer
No, my boyfriend does this, and I've been trying to break him of this habit for years. I say, please don't ask that. Just tell them what you like.
Yeah.
He's gotten better. He'll say, like, I'm feeling mezcal, maybe spirit forward, not spicy. And I'm just like, good boy.
So my comeback line, whenever someone's like, oh, what's your favorite drink? What should I have? Is like, well, what are your favorite pair of shoes? And they always ask that. It's always like, oh, depends where I'm going. It's the same with the drink, pal. And it's always the way.
Always the way. So let's go back to the music side of things. So at your bars, what kind of music program do you guys have? How did you decide what to play in there? Is it different for, it's got to be different for each space.
Each space is different. However, the music program in all venues is changing and evolving all mm-hmm, the time. Mm-hmm. You can't just be, oh, we are this bar, we are that bar, and mm-hmm. we only play this music. If you sit there and you stay still and you stay stagnant, mm-hmm. then you are going to get forgotten because mm-hmm. you're going to be the same every single time.
Mm-hmm.
When we first opened Happiness, I used to kind of very much play jazz and kind of like adhere to like the rules of a speakeasy. I was very mm-hmm. adamant that we weren't a speakeasy, but that was the kind of cut, that was the vibe of stuff we were going for.
Uh-huh.
Then that kind of started evolving. We'd play jazz early doors, when it's a little bit quiet or whatever, and then we'll kind of put more blues on, kind of like it's a little bit more upbeat, could mm-hmm. be a little bit more jovial, the mm-hmm. guitar stuff in there, and now we just play blues early doors, mm-hmm. and we kind of rock out some really amazing like band music from like the 50s, 60s, yeah. 70s, 80s.
What's your favorite tracks to play in there?
I had a real big phase for about 8 or 9 months of playing Black Keys to death. And that was probably back in like 2011, 12, maybe kind of going to 13.
That's when they were hitting there.
And I was
they
like,
were coming up.
I think, I can't remember what album it was on, but Lonely Boy was just like fucking brilliant. I love that song. It really is. And if you sit there and you listen to the Black Keys lyrics from all of their music, mm-hmm. you just know, do you know, in high school, these guys were the fucking losers.
Yep.
They were the nerds. They couldn't get girls.
That's because they were listening to all this old music that nobody understood.
Yeah. But if you listen to all their songs, and it's all about girls and not being able to get them. And now they get all the girls they want because they're one of the best bands in the world. And that's amazing. And
I'll have to listen to the lyrics again and see if they've changed.
It's really
nuts. See what they're singing about now.
My favorite album they did is Tullahoma. Mm-hmm. Which is like covers of like amazing songs, and like Meet Me in the City is like just unbelievable because the original track was by Junior Kimbrough, mm-hmm. and that's kind of like just you can hardly understand a word he says because I think when he kind of recorded the song he must have been about in his 60s I'd imagine, but their version was just so on point. I'm trying to think of the lyrics and how they go now, but I just love that track, and it was that album that really got me into the Black Keys. That kind of really.
What was all about?
Yeah, house music.
Yeah.
It was just house music. I was probably about 19 or 20.
Okay. So it was once you were legal to be in those clubs, you decided to try your hand at it?
Well, yeah, it was this point where I was working in, like, in the UK, what were qualified or classified as, like, pre-club bars.
Okay.
Because in the UK...
Is that the early... They close earlier?
Well, because, I mean, back in the UK, I mean, outside of, like, big cities, bars shut at 11. Whether you're a bar or a pub, you close at 11. If you want to go out a drink, you need to go to a nightclub.
Exactly.
And nightclubs, at that point...
Because they stay open all night.
Yeah, they were open all night. Or at least until 2. Mm-hmm. And the bar, my first bar job was in a bar that was not a pub. It was definitely not a pub. But on, like, Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights, we had DJs. These DJs, they owned a record store in, like, the big town near to where I lived. Mm-hmm. And that was, like, that big town was where I worked. And they used to kind of play records, and I used to go, and they were, like, cool, and I used to chat to them. They were, like, 5, 6, 7 years old, and they were, like, I idolized these guys. At this point, I didn't know what a cocktail was, really. But they would play records, and I was, like, they're getting girls as well. The girls love them. I was like, I want to play records. So I bought records. I bought a couple of decks and, like, DJ or whatever, bedroom DJ or whatever. But then on, like, a quiet night at the bar, I used to just kind of go and play records. And the next bar I worked in, I used to buy, like, loads and loads of CDs and stuff. And that's when CDJs became a thing. Mm. I used to kind of play records again, or play music from CDs off CD decks and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And I used to do that again on, like, the quiet nights. Then you couldn't. But I guess, like, you need to play music on, like, the quiet nights in the bars I worked in. That's kind of really me dabbling. But I used to drive all around the country at that point to go to different nightclubs and stuff to listen to DJs. Mm-hmm. And I was just all into house music.
Who were some of your favorites at that time?
What, DJs?
The DJs, yeah. Did they ever make it across here?
I think a few of them did. So Jeremy Healy was probably one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. And he used to play a lot of the Versace fashion shows and stuff. Mm-hmm. Brandon Block. Oh God, Sasha and John Digweed were huge. They were amazing. And then, like, there were a few kind of heavy ones. By the time I was getting, like, 22, 23, my music taste really started to change. Mm-hmm. And I used to listen to Norman Jay, was amazing. And he used to play a lot of that kind of early soulful house stuff, especially the stuff that was kind of huge in Detroit. Mm-hmm. I used to listen to that so much. And that kind of really got me, it really was that kind of music and that kind of soulful house. That got me really into, like, soul and funk and, like, really kind of old school hip hop and stuff. Mm-hmm. And, like, as a teenager, Taylor, I used to listen to a lot of, like, late 80s, early 90s rap music, lots of Public Enemy, NWA,
Oh,
King
that
B.
kind of rap. I was like, did you like the electro funk stuff then?
No, I wasn't really super into that, but, like, in my early 20s, I really kind of started to get into that stuff as well.
Mm-hmm. It's lovely when, especially. I grew up a bit earlier than you, but I loved the soulful house too. Like, yeah. I loved techno when I was hearing it so much coming out of Detroit, and then I was hearing stuff coming out of the UK. And there was that whole Ministry of Sound thing that was happening that was so beautiful and melodic. And so I loved it, but when the soulful stuff came in, I liked that because I love soul.
Yeah.
And again, so the soulful stuff, it felt like it had more heart.
The transition for me was like, house music.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of drum and bass, a lot of, like, house music, which was like sampling. And I didn't know to put two and two together. But then I was like, the house you listen to, then it was like soulful house, and then that used to sample loads of disco tracks and stuff, and I used to kind of get into, like, kind of like
and
my soul house
learning,
or whatever.
And it
was,
yeah,
you
down.
Do. And it's like, it was like house music for me as a kid. It was like, and it was crazy. And I kind of moved to soulful house, and you kind of used to get the lyrical stuff going to it, and then that kind of really tied into disco. And then, like, you start looking at the black influence and, like, the soul and the funk influence that kind of really that kickstarted disco. And they're like, hey, shit, disco was really just the forerunner to house music, and it's soulful house, like, mixing the whole two together. And it's like, that was amazing.
So your house is always a dance party.
Yeah. Oh my God, unbelievably so. And then it was like lots of, like, then kind of as I started to mature, like, I moved to London when I was like 24, and the bar and the music we were listening to there was like lots of breakbeat, New Yorican soul and all that kind of stuff.
I love New Yorican stuff.
Yeah, I know. So
that
amazing.
That was great for you to come here to New York when you dabble in that.
Oh, it was fantastic.
Yeah.
And then that kind of really just kind of evolves, and, like, again, like, the funk, and, like, going back into the blues, and, like, the bands and the guitar music. And because growing up, I didn't like that style of music. Mm-hmm. But then kind of when you just put it all together and you see, like, just the genealogy of music, and how, like, all just literally seals into one. So why I hate music now, because there's just no originality. Like, modern music. But the thing is, though,
you have to dig
harder. I'm sure that's what my parents said about my music. But again, we touched base on that last night about like, you know, the generational gap between like the 50s, 60s, what they listened to, and then what was happening in the 80s. It was so dramatically
different. It's sort of like from the 2000s on, it's tougher to find some of those influences
than
it was before. So they found the formula and stick. And you know what? It's the same way with clothes.
Yeah.
If you look at clothes, you haven't seen really terribly
innovative
stuff.
We were literally just walking through Washington Square Park today, and there was this ridiculously hot chick. She must have been about 20 or 21, riding a skateboard with fat sunglasses and like bright green luminous flares on.
Yeah.
And I was like, shit, you're literally from like Studio 54 from 1975. You couldn't be more fucking cliche. Yeah. And it's just hitting another cycle.
Yeah, totally. And this stuff keeps coming back. So at some point there has to be some sort of innovation. I mean, I feel like the 80s had, you know, the electronics came in, 90s had rave stuff, but yeah, it'll happen. I have faith. People are creative.
I don't know. I think we're just going to have much more hard go back to like real music, kind of a little bit less electronic.
Well, I think this is why Adele resonates with so many people, and she's been such a big hit because she's a natural singer.
Yeah.
And even if people aren't aware of the fact that they want to hear a natural singer,
yeah,
something appeals to them about
because,
her.
Because, I mean, I think this is the difference between like a lot of people who are popular and people like Adele. Adele and like your Amy Winehouses and people like Freddie Mercury or whatever, they are an instrument.
Exactly. They have authentic voices. Yeah,
they are an instrument. Mm-hmm. They haven't been taught how to sing. They haven't learned to sing. Like, I love Beyonce. Like, she's amazing. She's a natural talent, but she isn't an instrument.
Yeah.
You have those natural singers that are just instruments, and you're like...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? No, absolutely. And so I have faith. I mean, we can actually pull this back over to the drinks stuff, because a lot of times people will work so hard to create fascinating new drink menus. They'll bust one out every couple of months. I'm not sure if that's how you guys do it as well, or if
we work on our drinks are what I call classically styled drinks. We use sweet, sour, bitter, spirit and water, right? And we kind of generally work within those ethos. We do use a couple of modern techniques to extract flavor from plants, herbs and spices and sauces as such, but we're not
We're not
kind of doing our own home ferments and all that kind of stuff, whatever. We're kind of doing fusions. We've got a small still world. We'll like make hydrosols and stuff, but we don't go silly crazy because you know what? Half the time it doesn't reap good results. You're just using stuff because you can.
And
like
so,
centrifuges and like clarification process and like rotavaps. And I'm like, do you know what? This is really amazing. And sometimes one out of like 20 times you'll make something that's delicious, but you're making a lot of shit just to do it and putting it in a drink and it tastes like arse.
Yeah. Or it tastes like something that you've had a variation of before.
Yeah, but using more traditional kind of based ingredients.
And that's kind of where I was going, is that, you know, sometimes an artist will be accused of plagiarism, or maybe there's a song that they heard that song and they forgot they heard that song and might rip on some of that melody a little bit and they're unaware of it. And this happens a lot with drinks. I have a friend back in Los Angeles who gets very defensive if he sees a drink that has a name that he's given a drink, and he's convinced that someone
they
took it away from him. And
there's no chance.
I'm like, I'm sure there are other people who think the way you do. There might be at least five in the United States.
You know the cocktail, the aviation cocktail?
Yes.
Gin, maraschino, lemon, maybe a dash of violet, maybe not.
Right.
At the same time, so that was invented on the East Coast. It was discovered that in a book printed 4 years before that drink was technically invented, like historically invented, there was a drink called an aviation which used pomegranate, Calvados and lemon, and was called an aviation cocktail. It was like two different sides of the country. Someone was like, obviously it was in the boom of like probably aeroplanes coming in. It's like, I want to call my cocktail the aviation. This guy said, I'm going to call my cocktail the aviation.
Right.
No one of prominence was drinking cocktails on the West Coast.
Yes.
Everyone was in New York drinking cocktails in the 1880s, 1890s, whatever, early 1900s. And like, that's what became the aviation. And this one got forgotten about because no one knew it existed.
Exactly.
And it happened then. It's just today.
And it happens.
We have the internet.
Today we have all this written down somewhere. I had a talk with them.
But you also have lots of people who want to be doing it. So it's exponentially multiplied because whereas before you had like
with
five bartenders,
or with ingredients.
Now you have 5,000 bartenders.
And so, and a friend of mine who the chartreuse swizzle is attributed to him in San Francisco, Marco Dionysus. Yeah. And he was, I think he was at Smuggler's Cove, where he was bartending at the time.
Yeah.
If I remember his story correctly, a gentleman from Texas came in and was a bartender in Texas years before. And he said, oh, is this, what's in this drink? Is it bing, 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 bing? Exact same ingredients.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I used to make this at my bar all the time. We called it a this, you know? And
so I mean,
well, he wasn't
I did
about
that.
To sue anyone
no,
over
of course
it.
Not.
I mean, I did like 6 months at Milk and Honey in London before I opened my bar because it was just kind of like while we're getting everything prepped up. Mm-hmm. And I was working with Jack McGarry, who works at Dead Rabbit, who has a ridiculous photographic memory. He reads a book, he literally remembers all of it, and he remembers all the recipes and stuff. And someone, while I was working in the Red Room, and someone said, I really love gin martinis, but I don't want a gin martini. What can you do? And I was like, all right, let me go away, let me see what I can think of. And I made something up there and then up on the cup. It was gin, it was a dash of mascarpone instead of using vermouth, but because it's obviously thick and rich, a couple dash of absinthe to kind of give it a little extra depth, and some orange bitters. And just for a bit of fun, I put a dash of blue curacao on there to give it a little bit of a hue. And I took it out, and they said, oh my God, this is delicious. So I made one, I was like, fuck, that's really good. And I gave it to one to try, and Jack McGarry said, what's in that? I was like, oh, it's gin, mascarpone, orange bitters, and absinthe. He says, that's an improved gin cocktail. I was like, what? Like, it's an improved gin cocktail from this book. And I was like, fuck. I just thought I invented a really delicious take on a fucking gin martini. But no, guess what? Someone's done it before, because obviously I've used ingredients that were around 100 years ago.
Right. There are only so many ingredients to go right, unless you are really, really creating something, you know, this, all these different things in a soup or something like that. Then yes, you've probably put your spin on it. Probably. Can't say so for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm going to jump over to something else I ask folks, and then I can let you get back to your prep. And that would be drinking and music together. What are some lovely combos for you? Have you ever created cocktails based on a song you love or musical movement?
So, no, but our bar is named after a song.
Is it named after a song?
Yeah.
What song?
Loneliness Remembers, What Happiness Forgets, sung by Dionne Warwick, written by Burt Bacharach from the 60s.
Oh, I should know that. I worked on a Burt Bacharach collection.
The opening line is, loneliness remembers, what happiness forgets, I know. And it's like a bittersweet love song. So it's about someone who...
Well, aren't they all?
Yeah. Well, and then my second bar is called Original Sin.
Wait, is that the NXS song?
It wasn't actually named after that, but it kind of ties it quite nicely.
There was
the Original Sin was like Adam and Eve taking the apple and then forgetting and losing their happiness because they lived in bliss. So the whole point of Original Sin ties into the name Happiness Forgets.
Oh, look at you.
But it also happened to be an NXS song, which is what everybody thinks we've named it after.
Well, that was my first thought when you said that, but I didn't know that you had the musical trail.
Yeah.
So then if you...
So, but music
and drinks...
Are you
going to have to take another line from that song when you open up your small cocktail cafe scuba shop?
Well, the
or the name of your ship,
I've got
perhaps.
This idea of this really, really small, almost like a Japanese Ginza-style bar that I want to call the bar just like Ever After. Because it's like Happiness Forgets, but the tagline would just be like, and they all lived happily ever after. Mm. It would be like in bold, but the slogan there, and that would...
...... Ever After.
Exactly.
That sounds like your last place. The last one that you know this is the
maybe.
End.
Maybe. We'll see.
Maybe that's the name of your boat.
Yeah, no, actually, no. The boat would either be Ever After or Happiness Forgets. I think I'll probably name it Happiness Forgets. I'll probably name it after the first
I think
bar.
I cut you off. We were going back to...
So music and bars. Music is integral to bars.
Absolutely.
Always has been.
Yeah.
I mentioned it yesterday. It's like... So you say the best bar in the world is the bar that makes the best drinks is absolute complete bullshit. The best bar is where people feel happy, welcome and comfortable and always greeted with a smile. That whole thing of like, you need to walk into a bar to feel welcome and at home. Because I said to you last night, the bar is the local bastion, the last bastion of social interaction.
Absolutely.
And music plays a part in that. Mm-hmm. And if you curate your music to be a certain style, you're going to attract people who like that style of music. If they don't like that style of music, then you know what? They're probably not going to come. So that's how you curate your guests and your customers. Mm-hmm. And then that's how you get like-minded people coming to hang out in your bar. And that's how you curate your atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And it starts with the offer, the people, and the music you play. And the music is so important to a bar. Mm-hmm. And it's really easy these days just to pick a Spotify playlist and be like, yeah, that's what we're going to play. Whereas it's so much more worthwhile to spend fucking 2, 3, 4, 5 hours in the morning and just curate your playlist and go through whatever and be like, cool, bam, 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 bam.
That's perfect.
It's
perfect.
Drinks and music go together. It's like a partying. If you have friends around at your house in the evening, if you're ever hosting at home, you always put a record on.
I know. You have a playlist.
And then you serve them wine, you serve them a drink, and you have a little bit of food.
It's
music and drinks go together like sand and the sea.
Sand and the sea, No, and that's a Who song.
Is it?
It is from Quadrophenia.
Amazing. Oh my God, I love that movie. I haven't seen that movie for ages.
Well, because you know there was the album and then there was the movie. So there are the two things.
When I was younger, I've had Vespers in London for like 12 years or whatever.
Of course you did.
And when I was younger, I was definitely a mod.
I was
now
say,
as an adult, I'm a fucking rocker.
Soul, so you had to get into the Northern Soul.
Yeah, yeah. Now, well, I'm an adult. I'm definitely a fucking rocker.
We don't walk out here going, "We are the mods. We are the mods." Like,
if I had a motorbike now, it would be a Triumph Thruxton.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. So. I love that. Well, this is a good note to end on, so you can get back to your work.
No worries.
But let's throw out. If you want people to come and visit your various bars,
yeah.
How should they find you? Is there a social media thing you want to throw people at? Or just find you when they come to London?
Just stick Happiness Forgets, hashtag Happiness Forgets, into either Instagram or Twitter, and you'll find all my venues from there.
Okay.
So you find our profile, Happiness Forgets, or hashtag Happiness Forgets,
and
that will link to our other two sites.
Everything else. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to sit and
pleasure.
Talk with me. I love talking about music and booze, and you did it so well today.
Loneliness remembers what happiness forgets. I had to lose you to recall that life's not really all sunshine and laughter. Loneliness remembers.
A big thank you to Allie for sitting and making time to talk with me so that we could have this wonderful, fun podcast. He was very busy, and I seriously just crashed his party, and he let me bump my way in there so we could sit down and have this talk. And I'm super glad that we did. If you ever find yourself in London, absolutely hashtag Happiness Forgets so that you can find his places and check out the bars. Happiness Forgets, I had a wonderful, wonderful time there. And the menu, if I remember correctly, it says mixed drinks and mischief, which a friend of mine told me should be my life motto. And also apologies for talking over Dionne Warwick because she's so wonderful. But now you got to hear a little bit of the song from whence the name of the bar came, which is quite nice. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers, located at 614 North Hoover Street in Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated collection of spirits, and one of the most impressive selections of bitters anywhere. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook for information regarding spirits tastings. That's barkeepersilverlake.com and also in the Virgil Village neighborhood of Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Thank you for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guest, or if you want to connect with me, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. While you're there, give the show a rating and a review. It really helps to get the word out. If you want to hear the playlists our guests have curated, search She Be Mo on Spotify, S-H-E-B-M-O. Find pictures of the interviewees and the cool stuff they create on the Music and Booze with Mo Instagram account. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.